Well, we've just the usual ukuleles on the episode to start and end this week. But you know we love a good ukulele. Hope you enjoyed Annie's song at the end of last week's episode. And Anna, a massive congratulations to you. You survived 7 years with your husband. Happy wedding anniversary, by the way.
Seven whole years married, nearly 20 years together. I'm only 14. I don't know what's happened. I know we had our seventh wedding anniversary in lockdown. It was very exciting.
Yeah.
So yeah, takeaway sushi. We were meant to be on holiday, but it never quite happened. But yeah, 7 years and I've not been done for murder.
Well, congratulations. And I got my run done. As much as everything within me on Sunday didn't want to do it, I held true to what I promised on last week's episode, the Unsporty Guide to Lockdown Fitness. I got up on Sunday and I shaved 3 minutes off my last time of the 5K and did it in 38 minutes.
Oh, well done.
I was so relieved to get that out of the way. That sense of achievement when you've done something, even though everything within you doesn't want to do it. So I'm hoping that that may show on the scales when I weigh in for virtual group later this week. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. So welcome to Swimming World Podcast. We are Bite Size Mojo, the group in between group. We know plenty of you are doing your image therapy via virtualness at the moment during lockdown. But we hope that some of the subjects that we talk about, be it food, be it your mindset, albeit body magic, help to kind of keep you on track during these fairly uncertain times. There's loads of ways you can get in contact with us. Please subscribe or follow to this podcast just to make sure you get the new episode notification every Monday. You can email us slimmingworldpodcast@gmail.com. You can Insta us at slimmingworldpodcast. But we're just going to jump straight into it today because this is a subject which many of you are emailing us, you are Instaing us about. And it seems to be a hot subject when we do the virtual groups as well for image therapy. I don't know, you probably know a bit more about this than me, Anna, but managing our minds is so difficult, either from sabotaging ourselves, as we've covered in previous episodes, or whether it's the people around us who aren't necessarily on the same page. And now that we're spending 24/7 with them, we're not able to go to group, we're not around our friends, our usual kind of great influential circles as much as we want, that times are a little bit testing. And we thought, let's dedicate an episode to more about the mindset. We'll push the food and the body magic aside and talk about our mindset, because we've talked on this episode so many times about how sometimes your mind is the thing that kind of catches up a little bit later than when the scales do. So we're really excited to bring back someone who is or has already been on the podcast only a few weeks ago. We did Mind Your Language, Not Just Your Waistline a few weeks ago. And Dr. Linda Papadopoulos, we met in far more luxurious environments. Although your house does look very lovely, I've got to say, but it's not quite the ivy, is it?
Oh man, it feels like a lifetime ago, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Have you got ginger tea?
I've got like a really strong coffee, my love. This is not a time for ginger tea. This is we're in lockdown. We need the big gun.
How a takeaway coffee now, how exciting it's going to be to go away and get a proper coffee, like all those little things like your ginger tea in your posh restaurant is going to be so exciting to have again, isn't it?
So true.
So Linda, we wanted to kind of bring you in and get your help. You're a behavioral psychologist, a woman in demand right now from all the various news outlets and everyone who can kind of just get your wisdom as much as possible and inhale and digest it. And we're kind of hearing from a lot of our members at the moment about kind of a couple of different sections, really, which we'll go through in the course of this conversation. The first really is about managing our inner chimp. You know, Anna calls hers Delilah. And a lot of us seem to be craving things that are like nice and familiar because everything else is so uncertain. I'd just be really interested to kind of know a little bit about like the science around it, really, of what's kind of happening to us at this time. Because we often think about it as emotional eating, but really there's a lot more going on behind the scenes, isn't there?
Yeah, in some ways it's complex, in some ways it's very simple, right? So, you know, there's several kind of hormones that make us happy. One of those hormones is dopamine. That's kind of the, you know, that's what makes you happy when you kind of play a video game or eat something junky or something. And dopamine's great. It's the kind of stuff that allows us to learn things. So if you're trying to throw a ball in a hoop, it kind of rewards you with this feeling, but it also does something else. It creates habits, habit formation. Now, we know that a lot of the junk that we eat gives you that little spike. So this is kind of different to the other kind of good feel-good hormones. Endorphins, which you would have gotten with your fabulous 5K run. Serotonin, which you get, again, from kind of more long-term connections. Oxytocin, which you get from kind of cuddling, you know, your partner. Congratulations on your awesome anniversary, Hannah, or a baby or something like that. So there's a lot of feel-good hormones. The problem is that kind of old sort of quick route to that spike is usually stuff that is fine in moderation, but because we have habit formation associated with it, that's when we can't get off the video game, that's when we can't get off the sweets, that's when we can't get off scrolling on Instagram, right? It's all the same thing. So, you know, in many ways, you know, it's about kind of looking at that. I think kind of being this sort of, you know, scientists, when you look at your own behavior, is really helpful. Obviously, it's not enough, because we all know knowing is not enough, but I think it's a wonderful first step. And what you then need to do, to some extent, is look at how do I disrupt it? How do I still get that feel-good thing? How do I still enjoy, whether it's my food or my sense of well-being or even that habituation that we spoke about a lot, I know last time, we just do what we're used to doing, but not kind of, you know, feed that sort of old chimp brain, as you like to call it.
So interesting, because I think that's what we're seeing a lot, is those old habits coming back. And is that because it is just a familiar kind of place that we go back to? Like, this feels safe. Actually, I know what's going to happen when I do this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a brilliant question. So, you know, in times of uncertainty, what do you need? You know, in times of uncertainty, what you want is some consistency, right? And you're going to find, you know, fall back on tried and tested techniques, right, that you've used. So a lot of people kind of have spoken about kind of, you know, habits they got out of that they went right back into, unhealthy habits, right? So, you know, with stress, it kind of does a couple of things. It kind of makes us afraid, so it makes us kind of hunker down, and it makes us seek out familiar, especially with the uncertainty. And like COVID, you know, and lockdown, it kind of hits the holy trinity of uncertainty. So you've got novelty. This is new. And we know that our brains are programmed to kind of like seek out new and kind of fixate on information about new. There's threat. This is genuine. People are genuinely dying. Again, we're programmed, and that's the case, to feel very hyper aware, understandably so. And the third is uncertainty, right? So that, you know, which again with anxiety, so, you know, this kind of holy trinity means that it's not, it's going to feel like possibly the worst time to do the best things for you. It's the worst time that I'm going to think about eating healthy and running and, like, you know, putting on actual clothes when I can be in my pajamas, you know, sitting around eating junk. Although it's precisely what we need to do. And it is about kind of that separation between kind of thinking with the front part of your brain and thinking with that kind of primal part of your brain.
It's like, you know, so Sian dropped us an email, and we reached out and gave Sian a little bit of added support, actually, in the last few weeks. She has been feeling super anxious and suffering with anxiety attacks. There's just so much going on ahead. And just as she kind of feels like she can kind of get back into it, then before you know it, the emotion kind of hits, the wave hits again, and she just feels really like quite powerless. Yeah. When it comes to like dealing with anxiety, how do we kind of interrupt, like, before we kind of fall down into this spiral and just basically you can't, it's so much harder to come back out of it?
Sure. You know, I think this is a brilliant question, a really important one. I think generally with the way that we approach mental health, I think very sadly, we're still very reactive, right? If you think other parts of our health, we don't wait until, you know, we feel physically like we can't move before we kind of do a stretch in the morning. We realize stretching or working out or eating well is part of life. Yet with mental health, we ignore it. And then boom, when it hits us, we then kind of wake up and realize it. So I think one of the most important things we can do is sort of, you know, look at it proactively. So I would say, look at your triggers, right? So right now, we all have to kind of sit back and look at, what are those things? It'll be different things for different people, right? So what are the triggers? What are those things that really heighten my anxiety. And again, think about what anxiety is. Anxiety is the difference between what I need to cope with and what I think I'm able to cope with, right? If I feel like I can cope with something, then I'm not going to be anxious about it. So it's this idea of kind of anticipatory anxiety. You project into the future. So being able to catch yourself when you're doing that, and then using a few both behavioral tools, but also thinking tools, cognitive tools. So one of the behavioral tools that we know is getting the basics right. You know, eat, sleep, move. I cannot stress enough. When people come and see me, regardless of the problem, one of the things I always ask about is, how are you sleeping? Because we know that that feeds into both depression and anxiety, and it makes any pain, physical or mental, feel worse. How are you eating? We know a lot more about that now, and I'm sure you guys have done this a lot in your podcast with kind of the microbiome in the stomach, but even beyond that, the guilt around food, the comfort around food. So we ask about that. And are you moving again? So that's the first thing. The second thing, though, when it comes to anxiety is learning how to spot it, right? So learning about what are those things that tend to trigger. Is it I'm worried about, you know, something happening that hasn't happened? Is it realistic that I'm worrying about this? So starting to break it down and kind of look at those cognitive errors that we do. So sometimes it's, you know, catastrophizing. So, lockdown's been going on for 40 days now. It's never going to end. It'll end. It's all hands on deck. You know, on a positive note, never in our history have so many medics and researchers, literally millions of people, been focused on one thing. You know, we're all on the same side. So it will end. I won't be able to cope. Of course you will. Of course you will. You're much stronger. And I really believe this. We're much stronger than we're led to believe. But then it's about, how do I interrupt it psychophysiologically? So we know that the simple act of learning how to breathe properly, kind of in terms of your sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system, will calm you down. Very basic breathing technique: in for 5 through your nose, hold for 6, out for 7 through your mouth. If you breathe out for longer than you breathe in, we know we calm you down. So you kind of, and I'm saying a lot of stuff, but you need to hit every box. You need to hit the physiology. You need to hit the cognitions, pushing back on the disruptive thinking. And then you need to use the hacks around how you're experiencing it, how you're speaking to yourself.
Wow. I mean, Anna, we've talked a lot, haven't we? Off air, we've both talked about our struggles with anxiety more now than ever. And we've been quite open with listeners, haven't we, about just how difficult it really is. I find that really useful. Do you?
So I've struggled with anxiety attacks since I was like 11. And one of the first things when my mum took me to the doctor was the breathing thing. And I find, and I've got a 3-year-old, and I find when she's getting stressed, I'm like, Daisy, let's take a deep breath and breathe out. And it, something so simple can just change you from the state of total fear into I can deal with it. And like, what I've always found, like you said, is disrupting the thought and actually trying to rationalize it and working it out and putting it in a box rather than just catastrophizing it, which I do a lot in my head. Like, you know, I laughed almost when you said, is this going to end? Because in my head, I'm on the shielded list. I feel like I'm going to be in this house for the next 5 years and I'm never going to get out. But actually going, no, Annie, you will get out. And it will be probably much sooner than 5 years. But when your head's in that mush, it's quite a hard place to get to, isn't it?
So
is it kind of thinking about that ahead of time? Like if you're a kind of panicky person like I can be, is it going, when this happens, I need to do X? Is it having that plan ready?
I think, that's a brilliant question. So basically, I think the first thing you need to remember is that feelings are not facts, which of course we know, but when we're thinking through our feelings, so I feel like I'm going to die, I feel like I'm going to have a panic attack, feels exactly the same as I'm going to have a panic attack. So of course we panic, right? I feel like my heart's pumping way too fast, feels like your heart's, so of course you do. But the feeling of threat doesn't assume danger. You really need to hear that. It's like, you know, someone who's on a plane who's convinced it's going to crash and it feels like this is real, has no effect on the plane landing safely or not. And that's the same thing with all of us, right? So this mantra of feelings aren't facts, I think, is very, very powerful. And then, like you rightly point out, what are our two biggest techniques? Is challenge and distract, right? How am I going to challenge this thought? And if I can't, you know what? I'm going to count every, you know, person on this bus or in this room that's got something red on. I'm going to count backwards from 1,003s. I'm going to list 10 things I'm going to buy if I win the lottery. Literally disrupt that thought. And the other thing that I would say, and again, this is kind of the hard thing with lockdown. We know that anxiety needs space to flourish. So when I speak to kids, I kind of speak about this idea, like anxiety being this sort of plant. The more that you look at it, the more it kind of grows and it gets bigger. Of course, I'm looking at the plant and the plant's getting nourishment. So, you know, think of your anxiety as like a horrible ex-partner who's being mean and saying, yeah, you're, this is going to happen. It's going to end and you're going to, it's going to be terrible. It's gonna, and just be like, you're trying to bully me. Get off my shoulder. I don't believe you. You've told me all my life that I'm not going to cope. I've coped just fine. So kind of almost turning it into this dialogue of like, this is an illness. It's not trying to protect me. Here's the, this is the thing. I think worry serves a protective function. Like, I'm a Greek mother, my poor kid. I'm always like, don't do these, don't do that. I'm always like worried. Now I have a sugar like written 10 books. All the psychology goes out the window, but I try and remind myself that worrying won't protect her. And sometimes it works. So I can safely say, remember that just because I'm worrying doesn't mean I'm safer. In fact, it's just kind of ruining my headspace where I am now.
Such a good tip. So I'm going to say that to myself. I'm like a Jewish mother, so I know exactly where you're coming from. I worry for a profession. I totally get you. Do you know what always really helped me as well? And I don't know, you've probably encountered this, is knowing that I'm orchestrating the thoughts. The thoughts come from me, and actually, therefore, I have control over them. Because sometimes when you're in an anxious space, you believe that it's something else going on in your brain, but actually, I can stop it. And that's quite a powerful thing, isn't it?
That's so powerful. Absolutely. And again, if you think about it, you have literally millions of thoughts every day. You don't need to respond to all your thoughts. There's a bunch of crap that passes through all our heads. Like if we had a running commentary of the junk that goes through our heads, you know, so this idea that a thought is more valid, and here's an interesting one, a thought's not more valid just because it's sticky. You know, it really isn't. Just because you can't get it out of your head, there's people with, you know, horrible illnesses like obsessive compulsive disorder who have completely irrational thoughts that are very, very sticky. Just because they're sticky doesn't mean they're real. Likewise with your fears, likewise with your threat.
Yeah, just because they're sticky, right? Write this one down, Linda. Just because they're, you know, but it's those, reminding yourself of those things in that state of panic actually can really help, can it?
It really can.
One of the words which I think has come up on a few of our messages, and I recognize this too, you know, not wishing to be insensitive to the situation, there are people who are seriously ill, there are families who are losing loved ones with the situation with coronavirus at the moment, but actually overall that's the minority of people. The majority of people are being good, they're following government advice. And I'm one of those people, and I'm fortunate not to be like Anna, that I'm not having to be shielded. I can leave the house. But the word guilt kind of comes over me. I feel a little bit guilty that I'm okay and everything's all right. And that underlying kind of level of anxiety of the what if. But guilt kind of is a word that just keeps bubbling up from some of these messages that I'm kind of flicking through. And that can almost be a bit of a trigger to kind of like for people to self-sabotage, and then you kind of beat yourself up because you're like, well, why did you just go and do that? You haven't got an excuse. What's your excuse now? Why are you doing that? And I just really, yeah, I feel like sometimes I kind of am putting more pressure on myself than I need to, rather than be relaxed and be like, oh, it's okay, it's not affecting me, which also sounds insensitive. So you go round and round in these weird I'm okay but kind of emotions.
I think a lot of that will resonate with a lot of people. And to be honest, I think it kind of, in many ways, the guilt comes back to and is related to the uncertainty, right? Because it's like, what do I focus on, right? Do I focus on my luck, or do I focus on my threat, or do I focus on it? And look, I'm a quite a big believer that guilt is quite a, you know, useless emotion, because if you feel bad about something, it's either something you can do something about, in which case do, or something that you can't, in which case you need to move on, right? So if something constructive comes out of the guilt, so if I haven't spoken to my, you know, elderly family in a long time and I feel that that would be something nice, well then don't feel guilty, get on Zoom, put in a call, that's great for everybody. But kind of feeling guilty for the fact that, God forbid, you haven't been ill and you haven't, that's, A, it's irrational, because thank God you haven't, because actually the fact that you haven't is probably a testament to what you're doing is probably working. So you're probably listening to government guidelines, you're staying away, you're washing your hands, and that probably means you feel quite proud, the opposite of guilt. So the idea that you are keeping the world, you know, world around you safe. But I think also you need to feel entitled to your feelings. You know, just because someone else has a brain tumor doesn't mean your migraine doesn't hurt, you know? And you're entitled. That's your pain, and your pain isn't any less real just because someone might be having a harder time. And although I completely understand that having that sense of perspective is helpful sometimes, I think there's a really clear line between perspective and unnecessary guilt. So I think we all need to push back on that, because you hit it head on. Like, the minute you feel guilty, is that's when the self-sabotage comes in, and like, oh, well, you know, then this will happen, and then I'll just kind of, you know, whatever that means, I won't invest in my health or my mental health or my overall well-being or my relationships, and that just leads to a negative spiral.
The other thing that people are talking about is, because we're at home more, is about the support of people around them as well. You know, Cindy sent us an email here where she doesn't really feel like her husband is on board with her. She's worked really hard. She's only got last 17 pounds to get to her target weight. But her husband is a bit like, he's not really kind of excited that she's lost the weight. She kind of feels like her weight loss journey is like taking over her mind, when actually she's having to work a bit harder just to stay on track. Even to maintain, I think, for most people is like quite a big task right now, let alone lose.
Yeah.
So how can people kind of initiate that conversation with people? Because we've also got messages here from people who are saying, where's it, Amanda, who actually, she was kind of secret dieting. She wasn't telling some members of her family, be it extended or in-laws, that she was actually doing this dieting. So then it feels like a bigger hurdle to kind of voice these concerns that we have around our weight, when probably our self-esteem is feeling a little bit low already.
Yeah. Look, I think support is key. In fact, you know, I know you and I, you know, we spoke about this last time. Again, like, I think for me, the magic in swimming world is the support, is that they get the mental health side, obviously. But, and I know I'm biased, but I really think that that is the magic, and, you know, a big part of it, because you can, you know, if you don't get your head straight around these things, then it's never going to be okay, whether you're under eating or overeating. You know, it's all about how you think about it. And support is a big part of that. So I think whether it is in these times, you know, having your virtual groups, you know, and if you, for whatever reason, can't access those, like you say, someone next to you that gets it, it's really, really important. And sometimes I think people need to be told how to support. I think sometimes partners, they're not supportive because they don't want to be supportive, but it's like, you know, it's like me having to, you know, when you, you know, I remember, you know, when my daughter was little, we'd go to parents' teachers' meetings. So I'd have to like literally remind my husband of everyone's name before we went every time. Now, I'm sure he wasn't trying purposely, but I'd be like, okay, let's just, so, you know, again, it's the same thing. What am I going to, you know, what do I need from you? And then people usually show up. And I think, especially when you're on this weight loss journey, you know, what I need from you can be something as simple as, like you say, noticing, or I don't want the extended family to know, because actually it turns into a whole conversation I don't really want to have now, so I actually just want us to know. Or it's, can you kind of like not eat junk in front of me, like, or can you join me on this? But be prescriptive. I think the more prescriptive you are with your partner, the people around you, both for good and for bad, like, this is what would help, but actually this is what doesn't help, is really useful.
Do you know that that's like my marriage? I had to say that to my husband, like, darling, this is what I need from you. You bringing chocolate to tell me you love me doesn't work. Like, bring me a yogurt, bring me a banana, or notice that, you know, I've actually put something on that's different to my baggy trousers. And my husband was so thankful that I'd give him a list, because he likes a tick off. Do you know what I mean? It takes the pressure off the other side. And I think a lot of people, I don't know if you're finding this, but I'm spending more time with my husband than I have spent in years. You know, we're locked in a space, and that's a really different dynamic for a lot of relationships, isn't it? It puts a lot of pressure on too.
It does. It doesn't look, you know, I think you need to kind of ask yourself, you know, like we said, you're going to come out of this, you know, you can, it's all again in the language you use. You know, I can't go out as opposed to I get to be safe. I've got to spend more time with my partner as opposed to I get to reconnect with my partner. Like, you know, in a lot of ways, if this monster wasn't here, this horrible illness, and you were told you get to, you know, going for walks is going to be amazing. You know, speaking more to sort of, you know, grandparents is going to be awesome. You get to be with your kids and look at how they learn. You know, I'm not saying it's not hard, but there's definitely a positive way of looking at this. And I think in the same way that we need to sort of structure these sort of support system around food, I think there's also that importance of structuring that support structure around our mental health. So, you know, what's really useful is if we don't get into those unhealthy techniques of just sitting next to each other watching TV, but actually stopping and looking at each other and eating and talking. Now, that's not to say, you know, that you need to put tons of pressure on yourself, because I think, you know, expectations and goals are going to be key. So yeah, just maintaining your weight is absolutely awesome. You know, just being able to get to Friday with having, you know, not that many arguments is absolutely awesome. But at the same time, you know, invest in that kind of, in those relationships, be present, whether it's present for yourself, showing up for your health, or present for your, you know, family.
One of the things I've got to say to you actually is a thank you, because when we had that conversation earlier this year, in January it was, wasn't it? There was something that you said to me that I went away and it kind of like sat on my mind for a couple of weeks. And it was the line around when you said kind of like being at peace with who you used to be, like actually you're the same person. And I'd kind of not really forgiven myself for, you know, becoming fat, for becoming overweight. And actually that, Claire, had got me through some really difficult times. And I'd kind of sat and really thought about that, because I think I'd, if I'm honest, throughout this journey, I'd really been beating myself up, and I couldn't almost let that forgive and accept that that was just part of who I am and my journey and my history, without getting to peace with it. So I sat with it and thought about it for like weeks. And then I saw this thing in an article where it said, write a letter to yourself. And I've got my journal in front of me. I just wanted to read the letter that I ended up writing, because it was totally inspired from the conversation that we had. So I wrote this back in February. Dear my body, we've not been the best of friends at times, but I want to thank you for amazingly keeping going when sometimes I've treated and abused you quite horrifically. I'm sorry. Thanks for repairing quickly and not leaving too many stretch marks for my years of yo-yo dieting. I'm learning to dress you a bit better now. Even a new size 12 swimsuit looks badass. I can't wait to show it off on the beach. I'm loving your curves these days. I know I fought with you over this for a long time, but I'd rather my hourglass body and curvy bum over a thin, tall rectangle. This is me. You've remained so healthy and fit for me, even though I continuously polluted you and took you for granted. I hope my clean living, alcohol-free, smoke-free, vegan, slimming world, exercising lifestyle will mean we'll live a long, happy future. Ready, prepared for babies, for aging disgracefully. I promise to take responsibility for you and always make the best choices I can to protect us for many years to come. Thank you. Love, Claire.
Oh, Claire, that's beautiful. That's just so lovely. Yeah.
But I think it was just, I've not really lost any weight in the last year, but I've kept it off. And as opposed to, you know, patterns that I've had previously where I've just gone up and down and up and down, and I think I'm maybe part of that is just that I'm starting to accept what was and all the things that maybe happened along the way and why I did what I did, and that I think can kind of help in these times when we kind of come at a bit more peace, rather than this is another lockdown is another excuse to kind of use to send us off track.
Completely. And I think there's something really lovely within acknowledging that you get to be you. You know, of all the people, you get to be you, and kind of think about what that means in terms of, you know, you found the strength to do what you did. You found, and for all of us, it's different. Found the strength to, you know, to love in the way that we did, to parent, to business, to exercise, to whatever it is. you get to be you. And it's only when you value you for what you are rather than what you're not. I know it sounds like, you know, a cat poster. I'm really not trying to sound like a cat poster here, but there is something so integral about this idea of pausing. I think that's what underlies mindfulness and its benefits and everything. I, in this moment, you know, in history, out of everyone else, I get to be me, and I can either not be okay with that, or I can cherish it. And look, just so I'm clear, cherishing who you are doesn't mean you don't, you know, you're not on a journey of self-fulfillment and betterment. Of course you are. But the people that get there are the people that love themselves on the way. You know, mm-hmm. you know, acknowledging that, you know, I have a value and of worth means I'm going to propel forward. Acknowledging that I dislike myself and I can't stand this, you're coming at it in a very negative way, and that's what will throw you back. That's what will self-sabotage you. That's what will bring you back in those things. So take a second, I would say, to anyone else out there listening, and kind of just think, what are you grateful for? That you're you, you know? You're in this situation right now. Even the fact that you're just listening to this podcast, you're on your first day of this journey. Wow, right now, of all the kajillion things you could have been doing, you're doing something that maybe is going to change your mind. You're doing something that's going to change your life. And that's pretty big.
Mm. Love that. I often talk to my members, you know, when they're really struggling, and I say to them, let's focus on what you have won today. Is it the fact you ate an apple? Is it the fact that you didn't drink 3 bottles of wine? You just drank one. Because I'm a firm believer with my own mental health that if I celebrate the success, my mindset is going to be more positive than if I go, oh God, Anna, you're fat, you're back here again. Do you think it's really important to challenge that kind of negative speak and replace it with the positive one? Will that help?
I do. Look, I think it's absolutely fine. If you kind of look at the research in this area, it's absolutely fine to kind of look at a photo of yourself that you don't like and kind of think, I can do better than that. But if you look at that photo and you're like, oh, I'm disgusting, look at how... That's not helpful. So use it to motivate you by all means. But then once it's about, I think it's, you know, as a psychologist, I'm always very aware of, like, it's important to define a problem, but then let's move to the solution. Great. Here's the problem. You know, I can't run without being out of breath. Here's the problem. You know, I'm pre-diabetic because I'm overweight. Here's fine. That's great. We got the problem. I'm not happy with how I look. Fine. Where's the solution? I think that's it. Don't get stuck on the problem, because getting stuck on the problem is actually kind of soul destroying when it comes to changing it. And the other thing, of course, I know we speak about this often, but micro ambitious. You know, if you are sitting there with, you know, 50 kilos to lose, don't look at the 50 kilos. You know what? I'm going to look at that first kilo. If you're sitting there hoping you can run a 10K, I just need you to go to the end of the block and back for the first time. Let's do that. That might break it up, you know. It's in the same way an author writes a book. They don't sit down and write War and Peace in a day. They sit down and they write a page, and then that page turns into, you know, a part of a chapter, and that turns into a chapter, and so on and so forth. It's the same thing with your journey. And likewise, that, you know, writer will have days or weeks where they can't write. But come back to it. You know, you didn't ruin things because you had a bad day, like you said, because you had that bottle of wine. It could have been worse. What am I going to do different, though? You know, so don't use, and this is the thing with scales. You know, a scale isn't a report card. For me, it's like data. Be a scientist, right? This is interesting. So this isn't, you know, someone saying you're a good person or you're a bad person. This is someone saying, okay, what I did last week really worked well. Fab, or what I did last week didn't work well. That's interesting. So maybe what I thought was working isn't. So use it as data. That's where you need to kind of keep the emotions aside. When you're on those scales, this is not about you did well. No, information gathering. I don't care if you lost or you gained. I care. Do you know what you're doing right? Because that's the data. The emotional side comes from loving yourself and being on this journey and engaging. That's the stuff that you need.
Wow.
Amazing.
Linda, Claire will tell you, I'm not often quiet, but like, I've written so much stuff down. I'm taking it back to my members. It's so true. And I love that. Use it as data. Don't let it define you, your day, your week, your month. Brilliant. Yeah. Love that. Such a tip.
Dr. Linda, it's been amazing to have you back. You're just an oracle, and I hope that you are getting a chance to like refill your energy as well, because I know that sometimes by you giving this out that you give to us and you can deplete yourself. So I hope that you're finding the things that bring you joy and refill your energy too, because I know that just the thousands of people that will have listened to this episode will have taken 1, 2, 3, 10 different nuggets like Anna has. Thank you.
Oh, I'm delighted. It's always a pleasure. It's always an absolute pleasure. Love speaking to you guys. So yeah, anytime, guys.
Oh, thank you. Stay safe.
Thank you.
All right, guys. So lovely to chat. It's been a pleasure. You too. Bye.
Bye. Thank you. Bye. Wow. That was amazing. I'm so glad that you got to meet her, because I kind of felt like I kept her to myself last time, and this time I got to share her with you.
But I feel like I know her because I watch her on TV all the time. Isn't she brilliant, though, how she just says it so straight? And I think so many people just, yeah. Oh, that's helped me so much. Like, such a pad.
I know. Can I be honest? Oh, I'm still like kind of shaking from reading that letter aloud. I think because when you write it and it's in your head, like actually when you say it, it's like different, isn't it? It kind of has a bit more like, oh, I mean this. And not only did I just read it to us three, but I read it out on the podcast. So then it's like, oh God, lots of people know.
But you know, when I was first very seriously ill about 10, 11 years ago, I remember my dad saying to me, forgive your body. And I said, what do you mean? He said, you're cross with it. You're so angry with your body because it's let you down because it's sick. Make peace with it and this will be a whole lot easier. And he was so, so right, because then you're thanking your body for what it gives you. Actually, I've got legs that I can walk on. I've got, you know, eyes that I can see with, or I've got, you know, hands that can feel, or whatever it is, celebrate it rather than beat yourself up for it. And you know what you were saying about feeling guilty that you're well and all of that? I get that a lot from people, and they say, I know, I'm so sorry, I'm complaining about this and you're so sick. I love the fact that you're well, Claire. I love the fact that you're not shielded. I love the fact that you can go for a walk and I can live vicariously through that. So don't add the guilt in. You know what I mean? I always think, like Linda said, everything is relative and we've all got our own battles no matter where we're at, and they're just different levels, aren't they? So yeah, shift the guilt. I'm just so wild. So many things buzzing in my mind that I'm going to do this week and feel positive about and celebrate. And the thing that got me, Claire, I don't know if it's still going on in your head, is use the scales as data.
I knew you were going to love that, especially after like on the previous episode when you were saying that you had banned the scales. It was interesting about the support thing, because I am, as of today, we're a bit out of kind of like sync with when we put these podcasts out, but right now, as I record this, I'm 11 days chocolate free, and I still don't know where the chocolate tin is in the house. I have managed to not, like, I mean, the thing is, like, Matt's out right now. I could tear the house upside down if I wanted finding it. There's not many places it could be, to be honest, but yeah. I don't want it. And it does really help.
But I think that the really interesting thing, well done, first of all, but the really interesting thing to glean from what Linda said, and I think at the moment, is recognize this is like it's like a three-prong attack, isn't it? The threat that we've got during lockdown. And I think if you're in the headspace where you are winning and losing weight, amazing, kudos to you. If you're in that space where you're not, that's okay. Do you know? And I think that's a really important thing to recognize, because we've never been through this, and in our lifetimes we're never going to go through anything quite like this, I doubt, ever again. And I think it's allowing yourself the respect to say how I'm handling it is okay, but like Linda said, if I want to change it, let's get a solution.
So some of the quotes that she mentioned there: feelings are not facts, challenge and distract, and the fact that we can choose our thoughts. So amazing.
Do you know, when I had my first nervous breakdown at 21, that is the quote that got me out of my manic state, because what I was able to realise is, actually, you know, when a little person has a nightmare and they say, mummy, daddy, grandma, whoever it is, there's a monster on the wardrobe, or they've had a nightmare, you go, no, darling, there's no monster. It's actually okay. It's just a dream. It's just a thought. What we don't do as adults is allow ourselves the space to go, actually, it's just a really rubbish thought. We believe that it's true. We believe we've got to kind of go crazy with it and feed off it. And actually, it's so powerful to know. If you are telling yourself you're rubbish about your weight, that's just your thought. Doesn't mean it's reality. You can change it. So powerful.
Well, I think there's a lot for us all to kind of go away and think about over the next few days on this episode. I think this is probably going to end up being one of those episodes that people might want to listen to a couple of times. Just each time they listen, they'll catch something different or a different sentence that Linda says.
I can't wait to listen on Monday.
So
I love it.
The just a little note as well, to give you a heads up, next week we are talking to Chef Sal. If you don't know, Chef Sal is the lady who, if you managed to go on the Golden Bus Tour, which was kind of the big 50th anniversary for Slimming World last summer, it was, the bus was moving around parts of the UK. Chef Sal was the chef cooking at the bus, doing live demonstrations. And she has launched a YouTube series with Slimming World. They're already online, so you can just go on the Slimming World website. It's on Lifeline online. And we're going to be talking with Chef Sal, and it's fascinating. Some of the little stories we've already heard before we've recorded are exciting us. Things like what really happens behind the scenes. Because obviously, you hear a lot about how we do our podcasts, or maybe, well, we kind of express what we're wearing and often where we are. But whilst Sal's videos look absolutely amazing, we've heard some rumours about what's actually happening behind the camera, and we cannot wait to find out more. So that's a little taster, but I'm sure she'll have some great tips when it comes to food. You know, going back to basics, you know, keeping things quite traditional.
Onion seeds, that's what she taught me. Do you remember how obsessed I became over onion seeds? Because she put them in the thing on the bus. Onion seeds.
Onion seeds. Right, amazing. There's a teaser.
Onion pot.
Right, so that's coming up next week. Keep emailing us, keep instaing us. Obviously, you can hear that we're trying to filter your comments and your questions throughout these episodes as much as possible. And we are sponsored by Slimming World, so that means that we are speaking with the guys, albeit if they're working from home in their bedrooms at you know, from the guys at head office in Slimming World, to try and find the answers to some of these things and keep our ear to the ground on your behalf. But yeah, just make sure that you follow, subscribe. Thank you to the new reviews that we've got on Apple Podcasts, some really lovely ones. People feel like we're sisters or we're their friends, and that's exactly what we want this to be. We want you to feel like you are the third person sat at this table recording with us, and that you're here and, you know, you're nodding away and laughing along with us. It really brings us a lot of joy to know that we're helping and we're making a difference.
Do you know, I got sent a batch of comments from someone on a Facebook group, and the thing that made me laugh the most about what they said about me was, I just imagine Anna dressed head to toe in leopard, even her knickers. That's all I can imagine. It just went on about this description of me. I really feel like I've let her down. I haven't got leopard knickers.
Wow.
What a way to end the podcast.
I mean, just think, when lockdown's over and we keep talking about this imaginary tour that we're going to do, people are going to throw their leopard pants at you at the end. Could you imagine?
Oh.
Oh, the only other thing I've got to tell you, which will make you chuckle. Oh, no. No. Don't worry. My mom texted me the other day, got a classic mom text, and all it said was, well, it had a load of emojis, and then it had two words, naked yoga. So my mom got to the episode about the naked yoga, and she just said, I don't know what to expect from you next, but you never surprise me. You never cease to surprise me. So it's fine. It's all out, everyone. My mom knows. She laughed. It's all okay.
And she is clothed today. And please don't worry. I'll never forget when my mom sent me the aubergine emoji. No idea. No idea.
Right. This has been Slimming World Podcast. Keep doing whatever you can do. Don't feel the pressure. Try to enjoy your food. Keep checking in with your group. Enjoy your image therapy, even if it is virtual. And if you're listening in the future, maybe just be grateful that you've got your freedom back, because one thing's for certain, both of us definitely will be.
Can you imagine if you're listening to this next year? That's crazy.
You know, I still get messages from people who are listening to back episodes saying, Claire, you said on this episode to send you a message and ask if you ever used the red lentils. And and it still makes you chuckle. So even if you're listening to this in the future and it is not May 2020, you can always still send us a message, even if it's out of sync. We love it. Yeah. We enjoy it. So have a great week, whatever you get up to, and enjoy the sunshine.
Bye for now.